is divine. I go to ball games, the bleachers are fine. I follow Winchell and read every line. That's why the lady is a tramp. I love a prize fight that isn't a fake. I love the rowing on Central Park Lake. I go to opera and stay wide awake. That's why the lady is a tramp. I love the free, fresh wind in my hair. Life without care. I'm broke, it's oak. For Frank Sinatra, I whistle and stamp. That's why the lady is a tramp. Love the free, fresh wind in my hair. Life without care. I'm broke, it's old. Hate California, it's cold and it's damp. That's why the lady is a
This is WHFR Dearborn. It's 1 o'clock and time for our public affairs show, Local News and Views. What happens to you right next door matters most. Listen to the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn, the surrounding area, and Henry Ford Community College, too. Yes, remember the opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, or students, or administrators. However, well, we hope so. My name is Jay Koronick. Glad you could be with us today. With me today in the studio are two of our cracked WHFR news team reporters. Amy Powers, our news director. Amy was at the farm market this morning, and it probably was a beautiful day for fresh fruits and vegetables.
It was not only a beautiful day, it was very busy there. It's the busiest I've seen it. And
it's your first time, isn't it?
No, it isn't.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Dennis Reimars is here, too, in the background. I didn't introduce him yet, hoping he wouldn't speak yet. But,
but I will tell you, I was able to do an interview without a truck in the background.
Really?
Yes. So I'll take you out there and show you how to do that sometime.
Did you need a plane going overhead? No? All right. You must have went at a different time. Because even Jay said that the number of times that he's gone and done these reports, he's encountered the truck.
Well, the stores have to be supplied there, and it's always the biggest beer trucks in the world.
They must
have 10 million gallons of alcohol in them, and they pull right up to deliver to Buddy's Pizza there right next to the Bryant parking lot, and they have to, leave off a case or two. Not that much, but, these huge trucks, one truck delivers to the whole Detroit area, or I don't know, but it's always when we're doing the farm report. And so it's a touch of reality, which is how we like to look at all of our news stories here, that we try to put a local spin on everything, except when the beer truck wheels are spinning. That's when it's less possible out there. But always always a fun time was had by all, and today it was our hospitality education department teaching you how to run restaurants and cook food for the restaurants. They were giving out smoothie samples.
Yes, complimentary smoothie samples and a recipe card with it, too.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Always something fun happening. Remember, it's every Friday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Bryant Public Library parking lot, which also happens to be just immediately north of Buddy's Pizza, just off Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. Dennis Reimars, our news reporter extraordinaire, is here also in the studio. And Dennis and I went down to the Max M. Fisher Center today. And I guess you hadn't been in that facility on Woodward before.
That was amazing, seriously. And we were in the where we'll be set up tomorrow and Sunday will be the diversity stage. And what did BJ Pearson said that 440 people?
Probably total. I think there's about 300 in the cushioned seats in the music box or the diversity stage area, as they call it for Concert of Colors, and
right.
Room on the floor in front of that, a great wood floor to at least 100, 150 people can be dancing right there, and they do, because the music in that area is usually upbeat and exciting, although it certainly is in Orchestra Hall, too. So,
right.
Dennis, if you haven't been in the facility before, it means you never attended a performance of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra?
Not there. No. They've performed at the Fox Theater for different things, and I've seen the DSO there.
He has some culture.
And at the Henry Ford. During the summer, sometimes they're there for the 4th of July celebration.
I have a little bit of culture. That's where I bring my potato chips and my apples, and I eat them while they're performing.
Well, we're going to be down there broadcasting tomorrow and Sunday live from the Music Box area. That's right, folks. If you can't make it down there, and it's a wonderful live event, we've been playing the promotional spots, and I'll play one at halftime of our show to really get your excitement going. But Concert of Colors is a free concert with dozens of artists performing on both stages, both the Orchestra Hall large theatrical stage and also in the Music Box stage, just a smaller venue, but a beautiful, exciting, professional area. And of course, it's all wonderfully decorated, and the seats are all padded and cushioned if you want to sit down, and air conditioning like crazy.
It was actually a little bit chilly, wasn't it?
When they get huge crowds down there, it warms up a little more,
sure.
But it's just wonderful. There is going to be activities outside, a stage where they're going to have more rhythm and kids bands and performances, and it's all going to start in the afternoon tomorrow, about 2 o'clock and on into the evening, and on the stages indoors, it'll go to probably about 10 o'clock at night. So a lot of great local and international talent's going to be there, and we won't go down the list right now, but there is concertofcolors.org website, and you can look. It's Concert of Colors. I think it's concert-colors-org.
No.
It's
no dashes.
Underline.
Nope.
Just run together.
concertofcolors.com.
All right. concertofcolorsrunittogether.com. Okay. Even though they're not making money on this, they chose the .com thing, and it is a free activity. And it's a wonderful thing. So hope to see you down there enjoying Concert of Colors Saturday or Sunday. But we will be broadcasting. We will be changing our regular broadcast schedule, as they say, from 4 o'clock tomorrow until 10 o'clock or end of the last performance Saturday night, and about 3:15 we start with music on Sunday, going till about 10 o'clock or until the end on Sunday. And we've got a great phone connection, quality technology here that we were able to raise money for a couple of years ago, and so it'll sound really good over the air. We're getting a direct feed from a little baby microphone on my cell phone. No. We're getting a direct feed from the PA system down there, and they're going to specially EQ it, which is a technical term. It's bass in trouble. Make sure it sounds really good over our broadcast line, too. And so they've done that for us for the last couple of years. It works well. It sounds really good. And so if you can't make it down there, tune in tomorrow from 4 to 10 approximately, and Sunday a little earlier, about 3:15 to 10, for all of the Concert of Colors performances, all of them, in fact, in that number two stage, which is technically called the music box, but it's bigger than it's a very big box. The diversity stage as part of Concert of Colors is what they call it. So live from there. We were honored with a story in the Dearborn Press and Guide this week, and we always look at the Dearborn Times Herald and the Dearborn Press and Guide, and then sort of give our commentaries.
Who was in that story?
Well,
I saw a picture of somebody.
It was actually a reporter came by a week ago Thursday and interviewed Margaret White and also Mr. White, her husband Roger, who do shows on Thursday afternoon for us. Margaret hosts Global Village, a world music show from 2 to 4, and Roger, before her, does a blues show from noon to 2. And after 4 o'clock, they both stay around and co-host our Motor Live Drive show, which from 5 to 6, the last hour of that, is a live band performing right here in the WHFR studio, Studio J, as we call it. And they did get that wrong in the story, which is on page 9A of the Wednesday paper. Just a little detail. Everything else is wonderful. Our thanks go to Dave Uberte, who was his first time coming by the station and talking to folks, and he spent a couple hours here and taking pictures and so on. And the news team's performance is mentioned here, so not by name, because I forgot your names
when he was
interviewing me. But yeah,
that
we had interviewed Dearborn Heights Mayor Dan Paletko on the new Forum show, which is called The Heights News and Views, which debuted on June 29th. And, of course, Michigan gubernatorial candidate Rick Snyder. Actually, he's not really a gubernatorial candidate. Well, he is.
Until they get to pass the primary?
He's a gubernatorial candidate for the Republican nomination.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To be the big-time Republican gubernatorial candidate. And we'll see what happens. That's August 3rd coming up in just a couple weeks from next Tuesday. That's the time to vote, people, either Democrat or Republican. You say, well, where's the Green Party and Libertarians that you talk about and the Socialist Workers or... Well, they'll probably have candidates on the November ballot, but because they pick their candidates themselves, they try to pick the best person to represent their parties. You say, well, that's not democratic, is it? Well, there's all kinds of things you can say about the primary system. I don't believe in the primary system, to tell you the truth, folks. It gives too much credence and publicity to the Dems and Republicans as if they're the only candidates, and they are not. The only candidates. But if you're a Democrat or Republican and you want to help choose the gubernatorial and other candidates from, for example, there's 4 Democrats running for the 15th district Democratic slot for November. And so you got some choices to make locally. You definitely should vote. If you're going to be out of town on Tuesday, August 3rd, by all means, get an absentee ballot. Or you can just go into City Hall, Dearborn City Hall, or your local City Hall. Go to the city clerk's office, and you can vote right now. They give you the absentee ballot. You vote right there at that moment and hand it back to them. So you don't have to worry about forgetting it at home or sending it later or trying to find a stamp or something. You can actually do the whole thing. One fell swoop, as they say, at your local city clerk's office if you're not going to be in town or in Dearborn. The other reason is you're very old, 60 or above. That's good enough.
That's very old.
Oh. Yeah.
That doesn't seem very old to me.
Well, not to me either, as a matter of fact. But, look at that young guy's picture in the paper there. But
right next to yours.
Yeah. We wanted to maybe mention, let's do some other stories that about that error. Dave did say, and it says in a caption and in the story, is that Margaret's show pictured there at our console that I'm sitting in front of right now in Studio A here at Henry Ford Community College Student Center, that she does a show, the World Music Show, on Friday. It's on Thursday. He was there on Thursday. And in the story, it says we have the Music Live Drive performance every Thursday afternoon. It's every Friday, he says, and it's Thursday afternoon. So this happens. It happens with the best of reporters. Basic principle of communication is you can't always get the message across. Something always gets lost or changed, and it may be no one's fault, but you got to understand there's always errors in the newspapers and even at levels higher up, books and magazines and newspapers and, oh my gosh, even Fox News Channel on cable and MSNBC on cable and CNN. They always get something wrong, and sometimes more. To the point, they sometimes get the major point of it all wrong, which is terrible when that happens. So never trust any single source. I think we can support it later, or at least I'll tell you a book to read about this that just came out that really I think every educated person should read this book right now so they understand why they can't trust any single source, including this show. Oh, my God. Imagine people that would go around just believing what we say is God's truth.
That's how I do.
Well, Dennis does, but that's because he's already God. So
you just have to tune in the next week so you hear any corrections.
Oh, you guys were made my. Oh, that's funny. Anything to retract?
That's how we keep them hooked.
That's where we should start that at the beginning. From last week, we'd like to retract.
Well, let's look at the I guess it's a top story. It seems to be somewhat controversial. From last Sunday's Press and Guide and also this Wednesday's Press and Guide that has on the page 1A, the front page, a Michigan lawmaker is asking the Attorney General's office to investigate. This is the Attorney General of the United States of America, or is this the Attorney General of Michigan? Okay, and it doesn't say there, but I assume Michigan. Mm-hmm. To investigate an incident involving four Christian missionaries who were arrested June 18th at the Arab International Festival in Dearborn after talking to festival goers about religion. So this representative, Tom McMillan, Republican of Rochester Hills, stated this, both the Constitution of Michigan and the United States guarantee the right of every person to enjoy free speech and practice their religion freely, just as these men were doing. Those rights can't be just pushed aside for political correctness or to accommodate certain circumstances or locations. McMillan has been in touch with the, now referred to this these four people as the Dearborn Four, and has agreed to attend their arraignment tomorrow, and that did happen last Monday in 9th District Court as a show of solidarity. But authorities say, and they said this right at the outset, authorities say that the four, their names are, I'll probably get them wrong, Negreen Mayel, Dr. Nabil Qureshi, Paul Rezkala, and David Wood, I got that one right, so apologies to the others, were arrested. These are the four, as they're described as Christian missionaries, were arrested after they were said to be causing disruptive behavior at the festival. And that is against the law, disruptive behavior in public.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the definition of that can come into collision with, and of course, the enforcement, too, the style of enforcement could make a problem.
Are you talking that it might be open to interpretation?
Of course. It always is. The officers have to make that decision in that situation. Police Chief in Dearborn here, Ronald Haddad, said they did cause a stir.
Mm-hmm.
A stir. They had a big spoon, and they were causing a stir. I'm just joking, but even that is ambiguous. I mean, what is a stir? Big stir, little stir? Do you need a spoon to do it? And all those bad jokes. Okay. The four were later released on bail and described the arrest on the and the group is their group is called ACTS-17. That's ACTS-17.
Apologetics, right?
Apologetics. Yeah, they didn't have the full name in the Sunday paper.
So what did they call them? The Dearborn Four.
The Dearborn Four.
The ACTS-17.
And their website, or they have a blog, is answeringmuslims.com. So I guess they were trying to convert Muslims.
So it sounds like.
Specifically, and I guess there might be a few at the Arab International Fest.
Mm-hmm.
Rightly so, of course, and everybody else is out there too, I'm sure. It's a 200,000 over that weekend.
Because that's a long weekend, right? That's not like over a month.
And I just always, you know, who's the policeman? One, two, three. I mean, they do it by density. The helicopter flies over and they analyze. I mean,
I think it was up to these four people. And that's why they got arrested. They go, no, wait, stand still. No,
well,
but seriously, like you said, the group said that they were arrested over religion. Okay.
Yes, of course.
And, of course, the police said they insisted that that is not true.
That they were causing a stir.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
At the time, Haddad said, too, when they first interviewed him, our police chief in Dearborn, he says he wasn't taking sides in the dispute, adding that police officers were there to keep the peace at the festival. Officials with the Michigan chapter of the Consul on American Islamic Relations said they support the Dearborn police in their decision to arrest the men. but of course they're Islamic, who were passing out Christian missionary literature. And they went on to say, had those persons who were arrested in Dearborn been passing out their material at a paid booth or in a public area outside of the festival, continued on 14A.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Remember, they were filming this whole thing, too, you guys. That's important. This is all being videotaped at the same time.
Was it?
Why?
Oh, absolutely.
For what purposes?
For their own. I don't mean the word
sort
the way
of
it's
educational purposes.
Propaganda, but okay. No, I don't mean that as necessarily inaccurate.
Okay, I'm on 14A.
All right.
No, well, Russell, I didn't bring it with me. So I guess
it's also here. Had those persons who were arrested in Dearborn been passing out their materials at a paid booth,
yes,
or in a public area outside of the festival area, which was courted for specific use, we would defend them in this matter, said
of course.
Duad Walid, executive director of Sierra.
All right.
Must be the journal show. I know that theme keeps coming back.
Turn that off.
He mainly says, you know, being that they did not play by the rules, however, they support the Dearborn Police and as it relates to the particular action. It seems to come down to whether or not you, mm-hmm. you know, applied and paid for a booth or, mm-hmm.
or if
you
you're
know,
the
were just there.
So here's my question. If it was not during the course of the festival, which I don't, there's no way to, I mean, you can cordon it off so that people can't drive in there, but whatever. If it's not during the festival and somebody's walking through with his literature and videotaping, is that disruptive then?
Well, you don't have the crowds.
See, you know.
Yeah, they're there for the numbers.
No, absolutely. So, I don't know, but I guess there's a way of getting in people's faces.
You are, that is a public event
That's
on
what
public
I was getting
property.
At. Thank you.
And so you could be able to videotape anybody there. It's on the streets. You don't need permission to videotape anything going on there because it is a public event on public property. However, the speech issue,
mm-hmm.
they are making statements and handing out brochures, and that's like speaking when you hand out literature about issues. That in Dearborn usually requires a permit before you have a demonstration or before you have a march. Or give a speech. I guess you can try to go down to City Hall, little courtyard park there, and stand on a box and start making a speech without a permit.
Right.
But City of Dearborn doesn't really want that to happen even there. They want to make an assessment. And years ago, the ACLU sued Dearborn because they were delaying response on the permit, if they gave it, for 30 to 60 days.
Hmm.
Because, well, we might need time to get the whole police force together and, cause hire extra officers and traffic control. And they said, it's just too long. It's crazy because if you want to demonstrate publicly, locally for an event or an issue, you probably want to do it close to that issue.
You probably don't
and
have
after
that kind
30
of
to 60 days,
right.
It changes or it's not there anymore.
Sure.
So if you want to have, and of course, as anybody should know is, you know, that event is no good either. It really won't help anything unless it gets on TV.
Right.
But if you do a public demonstration, then, of course, you invite the TV reporters down. And if they tape it and if they use it, then it really will make a difference if it's somewhat current.
Second best is getting arrested. And I'm not kidding.
Yeah, wow. Because, you know, getting arrested rather than just escorted. I think I'm trying to remember several years ago the Dearborn Police seemed to have escorted a Christian conservative evangelical group that was escorted off or talked to and convinced to leave Dearborn Homecoming.
Didn't make the paper.
They had, no, I know it didn't, but we were right across from them. They sort of set up their own table, and they were handing out pamphlets that basically were implying, I thought, that everybody, not just Muslims, were going to go to hell real soon if they didn't get into their way of thinking. And so it was quite disruptive because a lot of people were very upset for being told that they were going to hell.
Yeah.
Right away.
It doesn't really
almost
resonate with me in our
pocket. Yeah, and especially at a homecoming thing. Now, of course, at homecoming, that is you might say, well, that's public property, but that's a carefully regulated event.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. You have to have a permit before you have a table or a display of any sort. Now, what if they were just wandering the grounds, handing them out?
And videotaping.
It's a video kit, but without saying anything. If they were just passing out pamphlets, that might have been allowable. But they were all grouped together, and they were in somewhat flamboyant, and they had signs, and so they were causing a stir,
right.
Definitely. A lot of people were upset, and they were going to the police tent and saying, can't you do something about that? That's causing a stir, or whatever they said, you know.
That's usually what I say.
We got Jay's new catchphrase here.
They're saying, I can't do that. They're saying, I'm going to go to hell, and I don't want to hear that, even if I am.
Yeah, you know. And if I do, I'm going to cause a stir there, too.
Right.
So I guess my question was, because the festival, the Arab American Festival, is similar as far as the regulation, like homecoming, do you feel that if these four people would have gone through quietly? See, there's...
Yes, they probably could have been able to just hand out pamphlets without saying anything.
Do you see how
just
volatile...
But not forcing them on people, just giving them, would you be interested in hearing about our religion or something?
Right. But this is so different even from the homecoming, even though they had a booth there, because they're in the heart of what is mostly predominantly Islamic.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And they were on a city street. I mean, this is Warren they cut off, so it's a city street, not a regulated park owned by the city.
It should be interesting to follow this up. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and good for everybody in trying to get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom of speech is constantly being challenged of all kinds in all the different media and court systems and so on, and it has to be redefended defended again, you know, even though it seems pretty clear in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, of course, the First Amendment, but it has to be constantly it seems like it's constantly being challenged, and it has to be defended over and over again, and you have to really respect freedom of religion in a free society. It makes our country much different than most every other country, even so-called civilized countries in the world, in that we have such extraordinary freedom of speech, including movies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, kind of interesting here that every other civilized country, Canada, Mexico, England, whatever, they have laws in place that will not just put a rating on a movie before it goes to the theater, but they can keep it from ever going to the theater. So that's not freedom of speech for movies,
right,
certainly. But in this country, yeah, if it breaks other local criteria of pornography or treason or libel or slander or something, they can sue after it gets shown.
Mm-hmm.
But the government can't stop it from being shown.
Right.
And they can in, as I said, every country but America. But then again, we are the movie capital of the world, Hollywood, and la-di-da. And we depend, in fact, on that.
I thought you meant Dearborn.
One of our, and maybe Dearborn. Hollywood of the Midwest someday, who knows? They had long ways to go, I think. But nonetheless, these are important issues. And yes, we do want to keep following them because it matters to all of us to preserve freedom of speech. But, of course, there has to be certain protections.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of the outcome, these four people had some courage to do this, just simply because they were in the minority, you know?
I thought, with the exception of the name David Wood, that the other three that were out there, they seemed to have Arabic names. As if they were converts to Christianity or this, we don't know what kind of Christianity. It's sort of an extreme sect. Or not extreme, but a smaller sect, and they have specialized beliefs that aren't necessarily Baptist or Catholic,
right,
or whatever. Maybe, I don't know. I haven't gone to their website. It doesn't really matter in terms of the issue. But they certainly have the right to freedom of speech in the right context that's not going to cause a stir.
A stir. I'm going to go home and reread Acts 17, unless you guys know specifically what that relates.
Jump in there.
Yeah. All right, I will. See you in a few minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of education, were we? No, I guess. Oh, let's talk about events. Got to do segues, you know, for the sake of continuity on the new WHFR Journal. That's the show you're listening to. Local news and views. Jay, Amy, and Dennis are here with you today until 2 o'clock. We cover things going on in Dearborn and the surrounding area. Station making waves. WHFR.FM. We know now that there's going to be budget-friendly family activities at homecoming. I thought there always were.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where did that come? That's news?
Well, I think they had to release something because it's kind of unusual. Here today, July 16th, we don't know who the major entertainment acts are going to be.
That is kind of weird.
Coming up August 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Because last year, Rick Springfield? Wasn't that
I
right?
I think so.
And before Eddie Money, I think, was the big guy before that. Uh-huh.
So there must be having some problems. Obviously, money is always tight for getting big acts to come in, but maybe they had a cancellation, or maybe they had some old-time rock and roller who just kicked the bucket, as they say. A lot of great metaphors today.
Yeah, but nobody that...
Nobody that famous got in the paper that they just died. Exactly. But
I guess that's where I was headed. You said that so
it
much
be
more.
A little bit more under the radar.
Much better than I did.
Well, they've dug up some old time rock and rollers that I've never heard of before, and I'm old time, so it's. But I'm sure we'll have fun. We always do, and of course there'll be a lot of family friendly activities. One of our local advocate groups, SOP. It's the unfortunate acronym for their group, but Save Our Pools.
Or fortunate SOP. Right?
Yeah. SOP Dearborn. So after you jump in and get wet, and then you come out and
clean
get water all over. Yeah, you
got
to sop it up. Okay. Is that how you spell? The pool group right now is seeking sponsors for T-shirts that they hope to sell at homecoming. That's the segue. That's the continuity there, folks, for those that are wondering how we got to that. Of course, the city of Dearborn had announced considering closing 6 of the 8 neighborhood pools in the city of Dearborn back in March. This group got organized. Mark Lane is the man who is in charge of the committee, head of the committee right now. And they started a Facebook page, Save Dearborn's Small Pools. But that wasn't a good acronym because that's SDSP.
Well, I think they learned from that because that's how it started.
Yeah.
So it grew from the local Facebook page. And they said, you know what? SDSP is just not going to work.
Sounds too governmental.
Right. Yeah, we got to be SOP or bust.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the committee already has 10 sponsors, according to the story in the Press and Guide here. And they're going to have their logos on the back of the shirts. The cost is $150 per logo, and the group wants to sell an additional 15 sponsorships. So logos are going to be rather small, but nonetheless, they'll be there. And they plan to print 750 shirts because they want to make a profit on this, folks, okay, in order to help, communication funds and pamphlets and flyers and whatever they might need in the future. Of course, none of those pools were closed. The city postponed making really, really tough economic decisions till next year. But that's something that will come back, obviously, and the group wants to be there to make their case. By the way, SOP is not a 501(c) registered nonprofit yet. So if you give them a donation, it can be for advertising for
a
business.
It's a true donation.
No, you can deduct it as an advertising expense.
Oh, okay.
You know, for your business.
Sure, if it's a
business.
Like
you buy a billboard or
right.
Ad in the paper.
Okay.
Well, this is an ad by putting your logo on the back of the shirt. So they can still deduct it. It's just in a different place. Tell your accountants about that, folks. But you individuals, if you want to make a contribution, buying a shirt, or I bought one of their great wristbands at the farmer's market a couple weeks ago. Beautiful. I never saw one like this. It was a sort of a white and blue all sort of swirly together.
Mm-hmm. What was it made out of?
Plastic, latex, probably.
Okay. Was it?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it'd be made
a little stretchy,
out of
just enough to get over your hands.
So. Inside of the pool.
Oh.
Or water.
From one that's no longer open.
Yeah,
well, I'm just
we
saying
had to close it, so now we have these pieces.
If you buy your T-shirt at homecoming from them, and don't ask for a tax receipt, okay? I mean,
it's $5 anyway.
Yeah, and the shirts are going to be sold for just $5.
You cannot buy T-shirts. You can't buy a plain white one anymore.
With all those logos on the back, I mean, that's got to be
a
collector's
keepsake.
Item. Yeah, at least.
That is awesome.
So we'll see you at homecoming, too. WHFR. We'll be there broadcasting in our tent, having fun in the sun and in the evening twilight for 3 days in a row, 10 hours a day from 10 to 10. Our WHFR beautiful canopy tent is going to be out there in the usual location right across from the carnival carousel. So just before you go over the bridge to the big field. Okay, what else do we have
here? Well, you were talking about music, and you were talking about free, so I thought it wouldn't be a horrible time to bring up the Jazz on the Avenue concert series that started. It actually started 2 days ago with Alexander Zonchek and friends.
Mm.
And that was, you're familiar with this, you guys, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that's over by where the fair is. Is it not? Is the Music Under the Stars in the same area? I mean, the Jazz on the Avenue?
It's been different places. What are you talking about?
The Jazz on the Avenue.
Where is it located there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Dearborn City Hall Park. There was one that was where the farmer's market is, too, correct?
Yeah. They also have a series this summer where music is going to be performed at the little park area between the Bryant Library and Buddy's Pizza.
That's right. Okay.
And they call that some park name that I never heard before also.
Okay.
They just call it the Bryant Library Buddy's Park, you know, but no, they wouldn't do that. And sometimes they have concerts at the Herndon Golf Course, too.
Really?
Dearborn Heights area that's run by the city. So, but this is in City Hall Park.
This is Dearborn City Hall Park, and we had, like I said, Alexander Zonchek, and then this coming Wednesday, July 21st, is Modern Tribe featuring Charles and Gwen Scales. And just, you can check all this out. Is it online? Yeah, that's where I got it. So it is online. Sure, at the Press and Guide website.
Or cityofdearborn.org. Sure. Yes. Mm-hmm. We're going to listen to two comments from Jim Hightower right now, our progressive editorial commentator. And we thank him and his organization, as usual, for allowing us to run these at no cost to us. Interesting titles of these two bits. The first one is talking about economists whistling. And I always think about whistling in the dark. So we're going to listen to that, listen to their whistling. And the second one is averting depression. Nobody wants to be depressed.
That's timely.
Of course. And
economy.
So let's avoid that, too. So we'll be right back with more of the new WHFR Journal, Local News and Views, right after Jim Hightower's comments.
I heard that. The bad news is that most people's personal economies continue to...
Let's start that over.
The good news is that America's economy continues to grow. The bad news is that most people's personal economies continue to shrivel. The June report on jobs glows with news that America's unemployment rate has fallen to 9.5%. That's the best we've had in a year. We are headed in the right direction, trumpeted President Obama. Well, not really. The apparent improvement is a statistical mirage. The number looks good only because 650,000 more Americans became so frustrated with their fruitless search for work last month that they quit looking. In the strange realm called Stat World, if you're so discouraged that you give up, you are abracadabra, no longer counted as unemployed. There are now 1.2 million Americans in this statistical purgatory. A couple of other realities also dim the glow of the June jobless number. One, for those who do have jobs, the average work week shrank. It's now down to only 34 hours, which means less income for, quote, full-time working families. Adding to this decline was another drop in the average hourly wage paid to workers. Fewer hours, lower wages. That's not what most people would call an economy, quote, headed in the right direction. Indeed, the strongest job growth in June came from the low-paying service sector, and nearly half of the 46,000 jobs added there are temporary positions. Meanwhile, another implosion bomb is set to hit American workers. The public sector, which has been one bright spot for decent wages and benefits, is about to shed tens of thousands of teachers, firefighters, park employees, utility workers, and others from state and local governments, sending our country in exactly the wrong direction. This is Jim Hightower saying, economists tell us that the recession is over, but get ready, because a depression looms.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
The most moronic oxymoron I've ever heard is the one being cheerfully bandied about by economists as they tell us that the Great Recession of 2008-2009 is over, exulting that we're presently experiencing a, quote, jobless recovery. I don't see how their minds can put those two words together without having their heads explode. Excuse me, Einsteins, but there's no such thing. You can spin your data till the cows come home, but an economy that has nearly 20% of the workforce either unemployed or underemployed, that has no plan for replacing the 8 million jobs we lost in the last 2 years, that is now proceeding with mass layoffs of such essential workers as teachers and firefighters, and that is willing to accept poverty pay as the new American normal, is not by any stretch of the imagination a recovery. Au contraire, buckaroos, the reality we face is the darkening shadow of what economist Paul Krugman is frankly calling a long depression. As happened in a similar decline in the 1870s, those at the top will prosper and take an even larger share of the wealth we all produce, while the majority see declining income and rising poverty. There is, of course, a way to avert this. It's called leadership. The way out is to enlist our grassroots people in an all-out Rebuild America campaign. Stop talking about a green economy and put Americans to work building it. Also, let's lead the world in putting high-speed internet in every home and school. And our crucial national infrastructure, from bridges to parks, is in a sorry state. Let's go to work to repair and improve these public resources. This is Jim Hightower saying, destiny calls, but our leaders are either self-absorbed, clueless, or cowardly. So we must lead. One place to start is with the Blue-Green Alliance. Contact them at bluegreenalliance.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
The 18th Annual Concert of Colors kicks off Friday, July 16th at the Detroit Institute of Arts with a performance of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra and a rare showing of the 1931 Spanish version of Dracula. On Saturday, the festival moves up the street to the air-conditioned Maxim Fisher Music Hall for 2 days of music on three stages. You can enjoy the Detroit Symphony Orchestra with Simon Shaheen, the Sacred Steel of Kelvin Cook, the Brazilian Funk of Zep Toro, Mavis Staples, and the return of the Don Was Detroit All-Star Review featuring Alberta Adams, Marshall Crimshaw, Jimmy Ruffin, and many more. WHFR will be broadcasting performances from the Diversity Stage, and it's all free. So come on and join us at this family-friendly festival, July 16th at the DIA and July 17th and 18th at the Maxim Fisher. The Concert of Colors. This is what music and community is all about.
So we will be down there. WHFR will be down there broadcasting live at Concert of Colors at the Maxim Fisher Center. That's Woodward Avenue, just south of the Wayne State area, just south of Warren, West Warren, although you certainly don't want to drive from Dearborn on Warren all the way to Detroit. A lot of stop and go and that's devastated neighborhoods outside of Dearborn anyway, but it's kind of depressing. But just south of the Wayne State area, south of Warren, about two blocks on the west side is the Maxim Fisher Center, which includes Orchestra Hall and the Diversity Stage Music Box Performance Area. It's also, it's kind of interesting in that block there, the Detroit School of the Performing Arts. That is sort of like our own Fame High School or Glee High School or whatever you want to call it, is right there. All of the Glee School, they've got a choir group, but they're not actually a performing arts school. It's just that they have that one club that is the chorus, just so people know. But there is a couple movie versions, and there used to be a TV series about Fame, and that was a fictionalized account of students and teachers at these performing arts, fine arts
high
schools.
Like a Juilliard, right?
Yeah, a special... topic-focused special training area for people that are going into usually music and dance and voice.
Usually incredibly competitive and you're right. At the best. Right. Yeah, I never did see those movies.
And that's right in that same square there, just immediately behind sharing some building space is the Detroit School for the Performing Arts, as well as the studios of non-commercial Detroit Schools Public Station, which is 90.9
right
FM,
across the street,
and
yep.
It is WRCJ.
Now, the school was the Ford School, correct?
No, it's a Ford Theater. The school has a big theater, and Ford Motor Company apparently donated some money, so it's the Ford Theater at the School for the Performing
Gotcha.
Arts.
Okay, I saw the name Ford.
A lot of Ford theaters. They went through an era... It was the 70s or 80s, and a lot of cities, St. Louis, Chicago, got big theaters named Ford now, just like Dearborn has the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, just a public relations idea, and they invested tens of millions of dollars to get that naming right, to be in every city and every entertainment complex, and maybe it works for them. I don't know.
What was Abe Lincoln's favorite theater?
Oh,
yeah,
ouch.
Exactly.
No,
Yeah, he.
I don't think he had one.
He was assassinated in the Ford Theater, whatever the first name of it was. Not the Ford Motor Company Theater.
No. That was the Ford Theater.
It was a Ford Theater of some sort in Washington, D.C. there.
Sorry I brought that up.
Yeah, but that's your way, so. Okay. Historical connections. We got to make the connections. Even if they don't mean anything, we've got to make these connections, folks.
It's incredible meaning.
Well, connections that do have some meaning here. We were going to talk about, I wanted to talk about, Bob King. Now, Bob King is the new head of the UAW. Is he president? Executive director, whatever, but he's the new head of the UAW, and he has been honored after his being appointed to that, or voted in, whatever, to that position.
You're elected, sure.
With a very, very nice editorial in the New York Times, July 9th, so that was a week ago, last Friday, so I didn't see it before then. But here's what he says about Bob King. Now, this is in counter to Jack Lessenberry's, in the Metro Times, editorial comment from June 23rd, but 3-4 weeks ago, where he questions if there's even a future for the UAW, and that the new schemes, as he calls them, that Bob King has suggested have a dubious, might have, you know, it's dubious that they will have any positive effect to decrease the declining numbers of the union and their influence in their automotive jobs, or in keeping their automotive jobs. But here's what Bob Herbert says at the New York Times. And he begins by quoting Bob King. Bob said, "We're going to show that there is a different day in America, that working people are sick and tired of the bosses getting million-dollar bonuses and the workers getting the short end of the stick." Maybe we'll talk about the Tea Party after the story.
Right, okay.
Okay, and here's what Bob Herbert said in his editorial. "In April 1968, the same month that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was killed in Memphis, where he had gone to support striking sanitation workers, the president of the powerful auto workers union, Walter Reuther, traveled to Memphis to give the strikers critically needed financial support. The sanitation workers were black. In his biography of Reuther, Nelson Lichtenstein noted that the check he handed over to the strikers was the largest outside contribution that they would ever receive. Some officials at the United Automobile Workers headquarters in Detroit were taken aback. But Reuther forged ahead," Lichtenstein wrote, "offering an impassioned defense of interracial solidarity," unquote. 3,000 delegates to the UAW convention later that year heard Reuther say, quote, "We laid $50,000 on the line to demonstrate we meant business. Who helped us back in 1936 and 1937 when we were being beaten up and shot at by Ford in particular, but GM and Chrysler too had their goon squads out, but Ford officially had their goon squads out beating and shooting at the striking auto workers. He said, "When our officers and our cars were being blown up by the gangsters hired by the corporations, who helped us? The coal miners, the clothing workers. As long as I am identified with the leadership of this great union, we're going to extend a hand of solidarity to every group of workers who are struggling for justice." Kind of interesting. I didn't realize that. But these days, in fact, it's become very difficult. One union goes out on strike, and the other unions, they just cross that picket line.
Right.
It's not that kind of solidarity anymore, and that's too bad, because the situations, us versus them, the employees versus the employers, are really the same. While Reuther believed that solidarity and a commitment to social and economic justice was the very essence of the union movement, if you want to hear a heartfelt restatement of those beliefs for the early 21st century, a period in which the union movement is in great distress and the living standards of working people have seriously declined, listen to the soft-spoken new president of the UAW, Bob King. And here's a quote from him. "My view of the labor movement today is that we got too focused on our contracts and our own membership and forgot that the only way, ultimately, that we protect our members and workers in general is by fighting for justice for everybody. The fundamental issue is that, quote, every human being deserves dignity and a decent standard of living," he said, "and the whole point of the labor movement is to help make that happen," unquote. "In Mr. King's view," continues Mr. Herbert, "the fight to organize workers and improve their wages and benefits is important, but it's part of a much broader effort to improve the lives of individuals and families throughout the country and beyond. He's a believer in cooperative efforts and shared sacrifice and is unabashedly idealistic as he outlines what can only be described as a new activism on labor's part." And he even mentions here, Mr. Herbert does, quote, Bob King's quote, "The Tea Party has been more vocal than we've been." He says there is something wrong with that picture, right, unquote. And you can read the rest of it. It's very complimentary to Bob King, and hopes that his vision will be the vision of the future for the UAW and maybe other labor unions. Well,
that's the only way it'll make it, because you know what? Lessenberry's not wrong. I mean, just based on what he's, in the limited scope of the UAW up until king.
The past history since Walter Reuther has been downward.
Exactly, and he's right. And the only way it'll work is with a vision like King. So that's cool.
Well, we always hope for these positive and philosophically beautiful dreams, and they have to work out in reality. We'll see how many people actually march on Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's usually a big march down Woodward Avenue to Detroit. Mm-hmm. It used to be that when it was a presidential election year, campaign year, the Democratic candidate for president would always be there giving a speech to all those workers, all the union members that had walked down Woodward Avenue into downtown Detroit. And I think...
How long ago was that?
I don't think Obama spoke there. I don't think we had any speech by any presidential candidate in the last March, whatever year that was, 2008, I guess.
Before that, did we?
Yes.
Not in March, but Obama did come down to Detroit.
He did several times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about Labor Day,
not on the Labor Day rally.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was always... In fact, it used to be, before campaigns started 2 years in advance of the election, that was the kickoff for the election. You know, Labor Day. Because the summer conventions had already designated their candidates.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the primaries, you've got a campaign nationally pretty much, not just in the states, for 2 years before the election if you're going to hope to win elections. So the Labor Day used to be a kickoff after the Democratic candidate was chosen as the first of official campaign appearance in public.
Okay.
It used to be, in Detroit, yeah. So, yeah, that's not going to happen. Okay, anymore. So, did you want to talk about the Tea Party here?
You brought it up, and it has me intrigued. I mean, but you're the man with the info on this.
Because I grabbed the piece of paper gave me. Yes.
Is that your way?
Freep.com, that is the Detroit Free Press online, they happened to pick a story up 2 days ago at their Lansing Bureau, is that a group calling itself the Tea Party submitted almost 60,000 petition signatures to Michigan election officials Wednesday afternoon this week, the first step in a process that could result in a slate of Tea Party candidates on the state ballot in November. Now, they need at least 38,000 to qualify as a third party, and then, so they have to have their petitions verified and see if it's real people's names and they really did live there and they were properly circulated and so on. But if they can qualify as a party, then they can put some names in there. Now, I don't think they have long to go to get the names in there before the ballots have to be printed. So this is November election, but, I mean, they don't have more than 2 months, so that's a real question.
But they registered in March to have that name on the ballot, correct?
No, they just put the petitions in last week.
Okay.
This week, two days ago.
What happened in March then that this guy Mark Stefnik, is that
Stefik?
Stefik. What did he do? They say that he did something in March where his name first is
toward the end. He's down at the bottom.
He's near the last paragraph.
Okay, looking down at the bottom, always read to the end of the story, people.
Yeah, sorry. I got ahead of us there. No, okay. I'm just intrigued because of this entire process is interesting. But
yeah, the story came, and it's interesting that this indicates that the Free Press got this by fax. Who uses a fax anymore?
No.
From the Tea Party people. It says, unlike most faxes, this one arrived with no indication of the originating fax number and no phone number or email to contact the sender, who is a Mark Stefik.
That's really curious.
Earlier this year, Stefik registered the name Tea Party with the state. So he registered the name. That just means he owns the name.
That's like trying
to buy a website before you have an organization, right? Just because people have to buy it from you or you're going to get
maybe
a profit
more
on
of
it.
It's like hedging, it's hedging your bet as well.
And the Free Press tried to, as good reporters would, contact Mark Stefik any way they could look him up, I guess.
Right.
And it says their attempts to reach him, if they even had a number, they didn't have a fax number certainly, have been unsuccessful.
Right.
Although I thought fax machines recorded the number it came from, even if it's not on the sender.
No, I actually have one that doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Some machines don't.
The ones from like the 20s.
Okay. Well,
anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
1925. I want that one.
So the problems here, significant questions, the Free Press story, a good writer, Dawson Bell, says in analyzing it here for our information, many of the activists long associated with informal Tea Party organizations around the state, and there have been little protests and signs varying wildly in terms of content at one event or the other, political ideas being tossed out there, folks. They don't like big government. They don't like what they call Obamacare. They want to die in their homes quietly with no money to pay a doctor, I guess. And I'm sorry, that's one of my opinions.
But some of them, it's true
that were certainly had their pictures taken. They would arrive at Tea Party events with guns,
really?
And threatening any local politicians that came by. They seemed threatening anyway because they had the gun.
Right.
It's my Second Amendment right to have this gun.
You don't really have to say much after that to be intimidating.
No, and so. And of course, nobody wants to pay taxes, of course, and so some are for lower taxes or no taxes or a change in the tax system. And there's a lot of different ways that a lot of us might agree. Freedom of speech, of course, number one issue, I think, or otherwise the Tea Party would never get their message out. But the point is, there isn't a single Tea Party organization. There's a lot of people who have maybe talked a little bit to each other. They looked at this website and that website, and they've blogged back and forth. And so it's a very amorphous group, and that's not a negative term. It's just constantly changing, you know, and we don't know where to find it exactly. Like, they can't find Mark Stefik, who did register the name of Tea Party earlier, but they can't find where he came from. They can't even find where the facts came from.
You know what? And if he is has the ability to get almost 60,000 names, that seems like the kind of person that you would want kind of organized. You know what I mean? Like, being at the helm.
Well, I'm not sure he did it. Somebody did it, which is an interesting question.
He registered it, so I guess we're led to believe that. You're right.
No, it says that Achet Zarco, a conservative Republican and blogger who uncovered the petition drive 2 months ago, said that he remains deeply suspicious of the new organization's motives.
Hmm.
Quote, after speaking to dozens of real Tea Party
kind of an interesting way to word it.
How are you a real versus an unreal Tea Party person?
Well, according to this person, he can tell.
The kind of tea maybe you drink?
Well, maybe they have a secret handshake and the other people didn't know it.
I forgot about that. He says, I'm convinced that this group that's gotten the petition is a nefarious group. Nefarious.
That
causes a stir.
Yeah.
Me.
It can.
Okay. He says, anybody that runs on that Tea Party slate is going to have the microscope put on them.
All right.
Because who the heck is that? You know, what does this group represent? They can call themselves Tea Party. They can copyright the name in Michigan. They can get on the ballot. But what do they have in common with all these other folks? Well, the trouble is that all the other folks that might say, I agree with Tea Party demonstrations here or there, but they don't totally agree with all of them, and so what do you have? I would suggest, as an organizing point, if a lot of you are Tea Partiers or agree with a lot of that, who are listening to the show, exploring. You say, well, I could become a Republican. Well, it's only certain conservative Republicans that would agree with a lot of the Tea Party positions. Republicans, remember, basically on issues, they are more in agreement, not in the U.S. Senate, but they're more in agreement on most issues with the Democrats than they are with anybody else. And so, you know, the Libertarian Party is, and I'm not pushing them, but I'm saying Tea Party people, look at a party that is already organized, that have been on the ballots, that knows how to campaign, that already has people on the ballot in Michigan coming up in November, and see how similar your beliefs are to theirs. I'm just saying, you know, if you want something that's already there and legitimate and not nefarious, what's the opposite of nefarious?
Unnefarious.
That's right. Thank you.
Or non.
Or a nefarious, is to investigate them because they have an organization in place and they agree, I'd say 9 issues out of 10 with the Tea Party people.
Right.
But not completely. They don't agree with everything that everybody, this wild, diverse group that sometimes calls themselves part of the Tea Party. And also, I want to make a point here, Tea Party. The original Tea Party was only about taxation without representation.
Right.
They wanted to pay tax, but they wanted to say how much and when and where
in a
democratic representative body,
that's right,
like our elected politicians in the Senate and the House. So there isn't any reason. It's not the same reason. So I don't think you should use the same name. I hate to be picky about this historically.
You're right,
but
though.
But the original Tea Party in Boston Harbor and the whole, most of the reason for no taxation without representation was the whole reason for the American Revolution to start with. They wanted democracy. They wanted representation in the British Parliament.
Right.
Okay. So you somehow look back at the Tea Party. You don't understand what the Tea Party specifically was in American history.
It just means something that's
a protest.
Exactly. It's against the way
government,
things are. Exactly.
Current government, which is unyielding and unlistening to their voices.
Maybe theirs, but...
I think the true division will come if they get on the ballot, because the Republicans have tried to use this angst to, you know, to their benefit, to Absolutely. Bring them into their party.
And it'll hurt the Republicans.
It will definitely
hurt the Republicans. If anybody votes for them, probably. Yeah, it'll take more Republicans away to vote for Tea Party people than it will from the Democrats.
Yeah.
All the libertarians, they'll keep voting libertarian. I know that.
But the
same thing with the Green Party people.
That particular article, they're looking at it saying basically that this is not even legit. That this particular movement or this petition or name gathering drive is right. basically to undermine the real Tea Partiers. That's what this article. I don't know if it implies that or stated it directly, but that the gentleman's name.
Marx.
No. The other gentleman who said that he doubts the legitimacy of this particular this petition drive. I think he even says that he's like, I think that they want to undermine the real partiers, which is my name for them. There's
okay,
no
we only have, only have a couple minutes left of our official show, and the podcast cuts out at 2 minutes after. We have not have seen our next DJ, Joanne Korchinska, coming in yet. She has had some transportation problems, which are not her fault, folks. And we assume she's going to be here in moments, in seconds. She will appear magically, probably on schedule. And if you're still out there, Joanne, listening, just drive carefully. Okay, we're fine here. You know, we've got a lot of people who have a lot of large-sized mouths, and we'll take care of it. Don't worry.
And a lot of papers spread before us.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get
blank, though.
Two issues, and of course I can't find one of my it's the one about the Michigan Fair Tax people.
Oh, that one.
Darn. It's here somewhere.
That always
Maybe it's
disappears.
In here. Look at that.
Okay.
But Sierra Club has made endorsements in Michigan for the primary election. And of course you say, well, the Green Party probably be closest. Well, maybe, but they always, want to let you know who the Democrats or Republicans are. And it sometimes happens that they recommend a Republican, too, for an office. And for governor in the Democratic primary, they recommend Virge Bonero. He already has the WHFR bump.
That's right.
Because he's the only one that came on our show. Well, Andy Dillon was here
last fall,
not directly related to this run.
Talk about that?
Yes, thank you.
All right.
But it's interesting to me that the Sierra Club has said that, and they don't take a position on District 15, which is the
Polidori's
old district, where there's four Democrats running. Mm-hmm. By the way, the teachers' union, is it AFT in Michigan? They endorsed both Tefelsky and, that's Linda Tefelsky, and George Durrani.
Oh, interesting.
So they didn't want to pick between the two, but they picked the two, quote-unquote, professional Democrats who have already won election elsewhere, unlike Alex Shamey. Was he on the Board of Trustees, or did he just run for the Board of Trustees of Education here in Dearborn? Well, either way, he hasn't won as much. And Stephen Dabkowski, who I don't think has won he did win election to the City Charter Commission, and then he was forced off for a residency question. Anyway, but their support for Senate District Number 3, which is Alma
Wheeler-Smith.
Wheeler-Smith currently in there. William Isaac Robinson, Democrat, who's running against her, I guess. And that's kind of interesting. They have a profile here of him. Vice President of Young Democrats of America, a teamster, an organizer. He's an attorney in Detroit. Political director of the 14th Congressional District, so somewhere around here. He hosted a recent town hall meeting on the Asian carp issue, so he's certainly an environmentalist there. In regard to that, he's been working to find effective strategies to close the Detroit incinerator. So he's definitely been involved with